Most people don't know how many financial accounts they have or their net worth. And when you're not paying attention, you're leaving money on the table. The solution is Monarch, an all-in-one personal finance tool that brings your entire financial life together in one clean interface on your laptop or phone. In just minutes, link all your accounts for a complete picture of your financial health. You'll never need a spreadsheet again. Get 50% off your first year. That's just $50 total at monarch.com with code BUDGET. That's monarch.com, promo code BUDGET. Most people don't know how many financial accounts they have or their net worth. And when you're not paying attention, you're leaving money on the table. The solution is Monarch, an all-in-one personal finance tool that brings your entire financial life together in one clean interface on your laptop or phone. In just minutes, link all your accounts for a complete picture of your financial health. You'll never need a spreadsheet again. Get 50% off your first year. That's just $50 total at monarch.com with code BUDGET. That's monarch.com, promo code BUDGET.
You're listening to the Preacher's Side Chick Murder Trial of Latasha Daniels from the Hidden Killers Podcast and True Crime Today.
When she was with Brodus, Latasha was required to follow certain rules. Rule number one that she learned on day one. You download the Confide app, you use it the way I tell you to, and you only communicate with me in this manner unless I tell you different. Rule number two, when Brodus took trips, Latasha was expected to be there, and she had to pay her own way, whether she had the money to or not. Rule number three, Latasha was not to call anybody to come to them. Even in the case of a medical emergency, she was supposed to call Pastor Pointer. He knew about their relationship. He would get Brodus help, and nobody would have to find out about Latasha. Rule number four, Latasha was not to approach him in public. He was only to approach her, because she didn't have a way of knowing if he was with someone for the church or with another pastor that may not know about their relationship. Very strict rules on what and when she could say to him. Rule number five, when she was in a hotel room on one of their trips, she was to remain naked. Rule number six, towards the end of their relationship, Brodus added that she should always respond to him with either yes sir or no sir. And Latasha followed all of those rules because she loved that man. And she loved the love that she felt like she was getting. And then things changed. On March the 15th, Brodus behaved in a very different way. He treated her like a piece of trash, like someone who was there for his use, not his love. Not worthy of his affection. And something in Latasha broke that day. And she decided that she was going to end her life. And yes, she did want him to feel that pain, because it was so much pain in her. And she came and never once threatened him. There was never a single allegation that she put him in any danger or threatened him or ever even pointed the gun at him. She actually gave the gun to him once he talked to her for about 2 hours. Brodus knew what to say to make Latasha do what he wanted her to do. For good or for bad. And that day, he did get the gun from her, and he took the gun and kept it. She didn't see it after that day. Which brings us to April the 4th. Her gun, Brodus had put in a cigar locker in Little Rock. Latasha did not have access to that. She opened her, or did her normal good morning text to Brodus. And finally, when he responded, our time has come to an end. And then it disappeared. And in that moment of disappearing, 2 years of a life, of a relationship, of love, was gone. And Latasha was still emotionally fragile from the traumatic experience on the 15th in March. Still suffering from those pains, but trying to work through it. And she decided that she was right the first time. She didn't need to be in this world. She couldn't be in this world. Not anymore. She had built her whole life around this man. And he broke up with her in a disappearing text. She apologized to her family and tried to make them understand that this is not something that she just thought about, that she's been struggling, and that the struggle was just too much. For this deeply religious woman to feel like God couldn't answer her prayers anymore because she was so deep down in this depression is just heart-wrenching. And that was at 3:14 p.m. on April the 4th. I'm having some technical difficulties. Okay. There we go. And so, after writing that suicide note, she did go to buy a gun. She didn't have one anymore, and she was going to kill herself. Yes, she planned to go buy a gun. That happened. She did not plan to go buy a gun to hurt anyone other than herself. She walked in, and you heard Mr. Palladino talk on the stand about the range of sizes and weights and prices. If you recall when he talked about 9mm weapons, he said the cheapest 9mm weapons are in the 200s. He said that the gun that she chose is a small gun. The gun that she chose is a light gun. And when she went to that store on April the 4th, she checked out at approximately 4:47 after going through the background check and clearing it. And if you look, that gun cost $229. She bought the cheapest gun they had. And just whatever ammunition they told her to get. Because this was going to be the gun to take her life. So why spend a lot of money on it? After she left the gun store, she went back to her house. She did not want to stay there long because she was afraid her adult son would come home. Poured the bullets out on the bed, grabbed a handful, shoved him in her pocket, shoved the gun in her pocket, and left after leaving him as much money as she could leave him. I think it was $500. She got in her car, and she started to drive. She was not driving to Memphis, Tennessee. She was driving to Jacksonville, Arkansas, to Johnson Park. This was a place that had particular significance to her because of various names associated with it. Brotus Perry was from Jacksonville, Florida. Her ex-husband's last name was Johnson, and her dad's name was Ray. All of those were men that had hurt her in her life, but that she had also loved immensely. She did not want to commit suicide at home. She did not want her adult son to find her, to have to go through that. She knew that her suicide would be hard on him, but she didn't want that weight on him. At that point in time, she believed her son would be better off without him. As she's on the way to Jacksonville, Arkansas, she looks up and sees a sign. And that sign said, "This way to Memphis." And Latasha thought to herself, if I can just see him one more time, I can find out why he is doing this, why he wants this to be over. Maybe I can change his mind. Maybe he will see that he still loves me. Maybe he will tell me that I am still worth loving. Maybe he will give me that reason to live. And she drove to Memphis. I want to ask, how many times have you been in your car running through thoughts in your brain as they race and you analyze and you're thinking, and all of a sudden you look up and you were like, how did I get here? I was on autopilot. This was not a cool, calm, do-do-do-do-do kind of drive. This woman was planning to commit suicide. This was not a drive to hurt anyone. She wanted to talk to him, not to hurt him. And she did talk to him. She went to The Pocket, which is a cigar lounge in downtown. She knew that he goes there on Thursdays. His wife knew the same thing. It was a frequent place that he went, not just on Thursdays. And Latasha saw him and did as she was supposed to, walked past him until he acknowledged her. When he acknowledged her, they were allowed to engage, and she talked. They said that they sat there and talked for a long time, so long that the valet pulled the car away. And finally, by the end of the conversation, Brotus had said, "Look, we can be together if you're going to be okay with the ethical non-monogamy." And Latasha said, "Then I want us to tell Tabitha." And Brotus said, "Okay, we'll go tell Tabitha. You go to the apartment, talk to her about tennis, talk to her about, you know, whatever. Tell her you're in town for a conference. We'll tell her together." And so Latasha goes to their apartment. It's unclear exactly what time she arrived at the apartment. It was somewhere between 9 and 10 o'clock, but either way, for the purposes of the timeline, you know, we have that span that we don't have an exact time for. Some things we can get exact times for based on evidence, like that receipt, or you know, if there's a phone call or something like that we can tie exact times to. We can't with this. Somewhere between 9 and 10 o'clock, Latasha indicated that she remembered the news came on.
So,
fair assumption there, 9 or 10. And this was in Collierville. Latasha answered the door. Tabitha answered the door, and Latasha came inside. They sat on that couch and talked for 10 to 20 minutes. At no point did Latasha ever raise a gun to Tabitha. At no point did Latasha ever threaten Tabitha. At no point did any indication that she was anything other than happy to be there happen. And then Brodus got home. And when Brodus got home, Tabitha described him as being very agitated when he saw Latasha. Did he think he called her bluff? That she wouldn't really go? He knew that she was having second thoughts. Did he really think that she was going to go into the apartment and tell Tabitha after 2 years? And she was there. And he was facing down the possibility of having to confess to his wife. And instead of doing that, he offered her bourbon. He talked to her about why she was in this why she was here for a conference. And Latasha, when he walks in, becomes confused and off balance because she thinks this big conversation is about to happen and he's just making small talk. Even going so far as to say, well, you know, if you're drinking, we probably need to clear those clothes off the guest bedroom. Latasha had never been there. And when she was there, Tabitha testified, and Latasha testified, that she didn't go into any of the bedrooms. She stayed in the main living area. That's a picture of the guest room. How would Latasha have known that there were clothes all over it? Unless Brodus said, we would have to take all those clothes off the bed. She and Tabitha and Brodus sat in that living room for 10 to 20 minutes talking with Latasha just waiting and waiting and waiting, thinking, well, he's talking about a bed. Maybe we're going to segue there. And he wasn't even making eye contact with her. At a certain point, he stopped even truly acknowledging her and just started talking to Tabitha. And Latasha realized he's not going to do it. He's not going to tell her. This doesn't mean enough to him. I don't mean enough to him. So I'm just going to go. I'm not going to bother y'all anymore. But she does want to know why. Just as a practical matter, does it make any sense that she was sitting inside of an apartment with a closed door where no one could see in for about 20 to 40 minutes? If she was intending on killing them, why would she not have done it when they were sitting in there in private? Instead of after Tabitha walks out the door into opening it up into the outside, she is outside. Latasha's standing in the doorway. If this was a cool, calm, reflective judgment, why would she wait until that point in time? If this was the plan, why would she have not done it inside the apartment? Does that make sense? But instead of harming anyone inside of that apartment, Latasha got up to leave. And when she got up to leave, Tabitha went first and came out the door. And then Latasha was standing in the doorway, and Brodus was slightly behind her. Tabitha made it all the way down to the stairwell before she realized that Latasha and Brodus were not behind her. When she turned around, she saw Latasha pull out a gun and shoot Brodus. That happened. What she didn't see and what she didn't hear was the conversation that Latasha and Brodus were having at that door, where she said, "Walk me to my car. Be a gentleman. It's nighttime. Just walk me to my car." And Brodus just said, "Tabitha will do it." That emotional whiplash of being on the verge of killing herself to finding this hope that she can have the life that she has been trying to have with this man, to the disappointment of being dismissed by him, to this moment of just indifference, shattered her. Absolutely shattered her. And when she reached into her pocket to find her keys, she found her gun. And when she pulled her gun, that was not a calm and cool and reflective action. That was a heat of passion. She was so emotional in those moments. She did that act, but that was not a cool and calm act. That was a result of passion. As she's firing shots, she's yelling, "He broke my heart. He broke my heart." And when Tabitha starts trying to get close, Latasha tells her to stay back. And Tabitha, who is very confused in the situation at this point, dives in front of her husband and tries to shield his body with her body. And during that process, had a bullet hit her in the shoulder. When she said, "Latasha, you shot me," Latasha said, "I didn't mean to shoot you." And Tabitha even told the police that she believed that Latasha was not trying to shoot her. Tabitha felt like all of this emotion was directed at Brodus, because it was. But it was a lot of emotion. Officers arrive on the scene at 22:36 military time, 10:36 non-military time. When the police arrive, Latasha still has the gun in her hand. Tabitha had told her, "Go, just go, they're coming. I can hear the sirens, just go." And Latasha couldn't move. She couldn't move. And when the police were yelling at her, telling her to put down the gun, what they saw and what they described was her staring blankly and talking softly to herself and repeatedly putting the gun up to her head or up to her mouth or up to her chest and eventually crouching down on the ground. And Officer Dunlap testified that he would have noticed if that slide was back and that chamber was empty. He didn't see that. The circumstances when the police got there, they're trained to assess. And they have this thing called the use of force continuum that officers kind of make a judgment on, do I need to put my hands on this person, soft hands? Or do I need to pull my sidearm and kill this person? And there are things in between. Do you believe that if the police thought that she was about to shoot the officers or Tabitha or Brodus in that moment, do you have any doubt that they would have shot the guns that they had trained on her? They opted for a non-lethal force because at that point in time, they deemed her a danger to herself. There is no part of what those officers saw that was cool and calm and reflective in Latasha Daniels. They saw a woman in an emotional crisis. While the police were there, after Latasha was taken into custody, they called the EMTs who came and rendered aid to both Tabitha and Brodus. They were then taken to the hospital where they both underwent surgery. Tabitha, thankfully, was okay. Brodus was not. He did die as a result of these gunshot wounds. That has never been in dispute. There are several things that are not in dispute. It's just a difference of whether you look at it from far away or come in close to actually analyze it, to see the details that make it up. Tabitha came in to testify, and she talked to you about what she saw on April the 4th and what she experienced. And she was utterly confused by all of this because she had no idea what was going on. She had no idea why Latasha would be there, because Brodus hadn't told her that he saw her earlier in the night. She had no idea that Brodus and Latasha had had a 2-year-long relationship. That this woman was desperately in love with her husband. She had no idea. And that wasn't fair to her. That absolutely was not fair to her. But even Tabitha came forward to say that she didn't think that Latasha meant to shoot her. She also told y'all that she watched the clips that we watched before. She never said any of those things. She never had those conversations. She never had those conversations with Latasha. She didn't alley-oop him any woman. The hard nose for her was anyone. But he lied to his wife about that. And he lied to Latasha about that. He lied to Chriselle and Danielle about that. The police department then start their investigation. They took Tabitha's statement. Chriselle actually reached out to the police department to provide them these videos because she believed that Tabitha knew all of this, that this would be so helpful to them because obviously Tabitha knew everything and he was being so honest and transparent that they needed to have this information. Instead, they handed over evidence that showed that Brodus was manipulating all of these women. They collected the receipt. They collected the video surveillance from the gun store. They did a faraway view of what this was. And they looked at it and said, well, she bought a gun, she drove to Memphis, she went to Collierville, and she shot them. None of those facts are in dispute. Not a single one of them. But there's a lot more to it. There's a lot more to it. When she made that drive, she didn't go straight to Collierville. When she made that drive, she went downtown. Dr. Erica Curry came in and testified, talked about the gunshot wounds, trajectories, things like that. The fact that Brodus was shot multiple times is not in dispute. The fact that Latasha is the one who shot him is not in dispute. She is not coming here to tell you I didn't do this. She's coming here to tell you that when I did this, I was so overcome by my emotions that I behaved in a way that I would not normally behave. I would note, with the autopsy, it does show no stippling, no muzzle imprint. What that means is that the barrel of the gun was 3 feet or more away. When Latasha was describing where everyone was sitting, and I believe Tabitha did too, Brodus was sitting directly next to Latasha. He was in the blue chair. She was on the end of the couch. She was within arm's reach of him. And nothing happened. The other doctor that testified was Dr. Binning. She is both a clinical and a forensic psychologist. The difference in those two things are one can kind of look at your whole picture and, you know, gather information for a legal process, and the other one can gather your whole picture and look at it for a diagnosis process. She does both of those things. And she has a very impressive CV to go along with it. And when she met with Latasha, she did find a significant trauma history. She did not find malingering, which means no evidence of the fact, no evidence that Latasha was not being honest in her answers on these psychological tests. She actually found that she tended to underreport her symptoms, which was consistent with her history of always having to put on a good face. Dr. Binning does not just blindly rely on what someone tells her. She listens to what someone tells her and then compares it to outside sources, especially for that legal process. And she did that here. And she found evidence to corroborate what Latasha was telling her. She read the police reports, including narratives about Latasha's appearance on the scene. She read Tabitha Perry's statement describing what had happened. She watched the video of Brodus Perry talking to Chriselle and Danielle about seeing Latasha at the cigar bar that night before going home to Carterville. He read Latasha's journals. She read Latasha's journals. And all of those corroborated what Latasha was telling her. She had a history of depression, and she would not, the state was right, she would not offer an opinion on her state of mind at the moment of the offense. And that's what matters legally, is at the moment. However, she did have a position about her mental state around the time of the offense. The reason that she could not speak to at the moment of the offense was because Latasha has trouble remembering those moments, just like Tabitha did, because trauma can do that to your memory. Around the time of the offense, again, corroborating by all of those items of information, she believed that Latasha was exhibiting depressive symptoms, an emotional dysregulation. She was in turmoil. She told you sometimes people who truly want to die are hoping that someone will give them a reason to live. And that's what Latasha was doing here. When she parked her car in downtown Memphis, she truly wanted to die. But she was hoping with every part of herself that Brodus would give her a reason to live. Latasha talked to you, and she told you her story. From a young age, all the way up to reaching out to Brodus for counseling, through their relationship, about his rules, about her love, about the fact that he had told her that Tabitha was on board with this. He just hadn't told her yet about Latasha. She told you about that emotional whiplash that she suffered for that last month leading up to April the 4th. She was getting pulled by her heart in so many different directions. And she talked to you about the fact that the moment that her hand went into her pocket was a moment when she was shattering. That was the word that she used. In that moment, she shattered. The timeline in the case supports what Latasha told you happened. At 3:14, we have a suicide note written, which is before going to buy a gun. She then takes a quick trip home and then leaves for the park. Driving down 440, where there's a split for Memphis. She proceeds towards Memphis and arrives downtown, speaks with Brodus for a long time. Latasha then drives to Collierville, sits in the parking lot, calls Brodus, starts to have some second thoughts, and Brodus says, no, go on in, go on in. Latasha goes to the apartment, Tabitha lets her in. They talk for 10 to 20 minutes. Brodus arrives back home. They talk for 10 to 20 minutes. And then Latasha says, I'm going to leave now. Police respond at 22:36, again, 10:36 Central Time. And by 10:36, Latasha is still standing there with the weapon in her hand. If she left Arkansas at 5 o'clock, and it only takes 3 hours to get to Collierville, why was it 10:36 when police arrived? Unless there was something that happened in between. And we know that there was something that happened in between because Brodus made a video saying, guess who I just saw as I'm walking out of the cigar lounge? All of that corroborates what Ms. Daniels came here to tell you. And I can tell you, sitting on that stand is not easy, especially talking about the things that she had to sit up there and talk about. She's not proud of what she did. She is extremely remorseful for what happened that day. when the prosecutor during cross-examination said, "You went there to shoot him, didn't you?" She said, "No, no, ma'am, I loved him. I would never hurt him. No, that was not my intention." Because she didn't come to Memphis to hurt him. She was planning on hurting herself. And she walked into that apartment, happy to be there in the hopes that she would get some semblance of that love back. Very briefly, I'm gonna talk to you all about the law. You have your jury instructions, and there are some that I would like for you to cue in on because they're very important. If you remember during jury selection, Voir dire, we talked about criminal offenses and what's required. And what's required is an act and an intent. You have to have both. When you look at what are called lesser included offenses, the act never changes. The intent is what changes. On count one, the lesser included offenses are all of the offenses: first degree murder, second degree murder, voluntary manslaughter, reckless homicide, criminally negligent homicide. As I told you, Latasha Daniels pleads not guilty to first degree murder. I submit that the appropriate charge in this case, as it pertains to Brodus Perry, is voluntary manslaughter. Voluntary manslaughter is an intentional and knowing killing that occurs during a heat of passion. That is exactly what the facts before us in this trial have laid out. Premeditation requires the exercise of reflection and judgment. Careful consideration. Sufficient freedom from excitement and passion so as to be capable of premeditation. When you are in that emotional state of passion, you can't reason properly. That's why premeditation requires the absence of all of those emotions to truly and thoughtfully judge and reflect on your actions before you take them. The emotions cloud that ability and impair that ability. A heat of passion means any of the human emotions, known as anger, rage, sudden resentment, terror, or similar emotions, which render the mind incapable of cold reflection. I submit to you, ladies and gentlemen, that that is exactly what we have here. This was a voluntary manslaughter. This was not a first-degree murder. And I told you from day one that Ms. Daniels was not coming here to tell you I didn't do anything wrong. She knows what she did was wrong. She feels that every day. But that doesn't mean that that was a cool premeditated act. Count two, the count pertaining to Tabitha Perry Archie. Criminal attempt first degree, criminal attempt second degree, criminal attempt voluntary manslaughter, and reckless endangerment. Those are the lesser included offenses as they pertain to her. I submit to you that the actions that led to Ms. Perry's injury was reckless endangerment. The process that involved Ms. Perry getting shot, she actually put herself into that line of fire, and Ms. Daniels did not even mean to shoot her. Ms. Perry even believes that Latasha was not trying to shoot her. Tabitha told the police that. Tabitha told y'all that. The police told you that. She tried to shield Brodus, and in the process she got hurt. And that was an unacceptable risk that Latasha took when she fired those shots. And she should have known that firing those shots in that apartment could have ended up hurting Tabitha. And that's exactly what happened. The definition of recklessly in your jury instructions is found on page 9. And that is where, when you look at reckless endangerment, it will refer you back to the other definitions. That's where you find recklessly. A person acts recklessly when they are aware of but consciously disregard a risk that is substantial and unjustifiable that the alleged victim will be killed. Because it's under the reckless homicide, they refer to actual killing. It's applicable also to the reckless endangerment without a killing. The risk must be of such a nature and degree that its disregard constitutes a gross deviation from the standard of care that an ordinary person would exercise under the circumstances as viewed from an acute person's standpoint. She had absolutely no intention to hurt Tabitha, but firing those shots was a risk that she would. And she did hurt Tabitha. I submit to you that the appropriate charge on count 2 is reckless endangerment. All of these must be proven by the state beyond a reasonable doubt. And we talked for a long time in voir dire about beyond a reasonable doubt. The prosecution must present evidence that is so convincing that it leaves no other logical explanation for the facts except that the accused is guilty of the charged offense to a moral certainty. One of the elements that must be proven is the intent, is Latasha Daniels' intent. So if you come down and you have one version of this event where this is a cool, calm, premeditated murder, and you have another version of events where this is a woman who was in an emotional distress, and both of those are reasonable based on the evidence, then the state has not carried their burden as to first-degree murder. The appropriate charge would be voluntary manslaughter. And that burden is very, very high. You can see both of those things if you step back and look at it and understand that while you may see two faces, you may see an apple core. And it's reasonable to see both of those things. No matter which one you looked up and immediately saw, or which one you prefer, both are reasonable as an explanation of what you see in that picture. This is the state's case from far, far away, looking at these facts. Facts that are not in dispute. But they are missing the actual picture and showing you something that isn't really what this was. I'm asking you to look at all of the evidence that has been presented to you over the course of this week and to see the details of what that picture actually is. Thank you.
Any jurors in the room? Stay.
You've heard all the evidence and most of the arguments. And the assumption at this point, based on our history, is I'm not going to be up here for an hour and a half, right? And I thought about that yesterday and more today, and I hope you appreciate that. But I don't want you to take that to mean that I don't have anything to say about this case, or that I don't want you to understand how significant that the proof is in this case, because it's significant. And it's almost so clear that it just doesn't take a whole lot of time to explain it to you or to prove it to you. So if I can just take a few minutes to go back through there just to remind you of what we're looking at. The proof is clear even by her admission that she got a text that morning that said this relationship is over. I don't want to be in it anymore. And that shouldn't have been, and probably wasn't, a huge surprise to her. Because for the past months, weeks, she was even going to break up with him at one point. You know, really since he had moved from Little Rock, the relationship hadn't been the same. So what did she do in response to that? And she can tell you, this is what I plan to do, but the proof is she immediately went to buy a gun and immediately drove to Memphis to find him. 3 hours. And that's not disputed. She says, I was going to kill myself. But she wound up in Memphis with him. And she wound up at his house. She was still there when the police arrived. She shot him multiple times and shot Tabitha Perry Archie in the process. I mean, that's overwhelming proof of intentional premeditated murder, and she agrees all that happened. Do you remember there was a discussion, I believe it was in jury selection, about we do things different here than we do in the real world? I mean, I don't really know what that means. Because what we know is that in the real world, Brodus Perry is not here to tell this story. That he was shot and killed in his own home in front of his wife. And we know that Tabitha was shot while kneeling next to her husband, trying to protect him and help him and begging her to stop. You know, there's a lot of talk about reflection and judgment, cool, calm, and collected. Well, she was cool, calm, and collected enough to say, according to her, Tabitha, get out of the way. She doesn't remember anything, but she knows she didn't mean to shoot Tabitha.
There's more of the Preacher's Side Chick murder trial of Latasha Daniels coming up. Press subscribe now so you don't miss a moment from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today.